It is the second time in, I think it's 4 or 5 weeks that I've used taps to open up a show. I do feel like this is the perfect theme song for today's episode. This very special presidential debate post-show. The first meeting between President Donald Trump and the Democratic nominee, Joe Biden. Joining me right now, Mike from the Humanist Report. Mike, thanks so much for joining me.
Hi, it's great to be here, Matt.
Let me turn you up, because right now they got the taps blasting in the background. Say hello again, Mike.
Hello, everyone. I'm really happy to be back on Doomed with Matt Binder.
You better fix
night.
That right there.
This was an issue last time, so I remembered.
Honestly, I didn't even try to say your last name, so it was...
That's fair.
Honestly, I know it, but whenever I'm put on the spot, I mangle it. I don't know why. This happened.
It's just too many syllables, too many vowels. I get it. I'm Mike from the Humanist Report forever, and I'm okay with that.
All right, ladies and gentlemen. Mike, it's a pleasure to have you here tonight. I was just saying before how... before we went live, I was like, oh, I'm so sorry for keeping you up late. It's 11 o'clock here on the East Coast. But you're not on the East Coast. You're wide awake, bright-eyed, and bushy-tailed on the West Coast, where it is only 8 o'clock.
Yeah, yeah. Different world, it feels like. But I'm not going to have to stay up late for coming on this podcast. So I get to have fun, talk about the debate, and then, like, you know, prep my segment for tomorrow or tonight. It's nice to talk through this with someone else, because if I'm talking to someone, then it doesn't feel like I'm losing my mind, which right. I kind of like, you know, after watching that debate, a little bit feel like I'm going crazy, but you know.
Right. It was quite the spectacle. I think that's the best thing to call it. I mean, I don't know what was going on with the moderator, Chris Wallace, but I don't want to spend too much. We could talk about him maybe later, but I don't want to spend too much time on him right now. But he really let it all hang loose. Just let the guys go at it and say whatever they wanted to say whenever they wanted to say it. And by guys, I do mean Donald Trump, because it was mostly him just blabbing away, interrupting every other word that Joe Biden was trying to say.
Yeah, it was really getting irritating to me because, you know, at one point, I don't remember what it was specifically, but like, Chris Wallace said something to the effect of, well, we were going to talk about race, but you can talk about whatever you want to Trump. And it's like, all right, then just step down. Like, if you're not going to moderate, if you refuse to moderate and you can't try to wrangle Donald Trump and rein him in, even though that's difficult, then step aside. I was really frustrated with, you know, Chris Wallace. But, you know, it is admittedly difficult to control Trump, because he's difficult to be controlled. I think somebody on Twitter put it best, that he really is like a bull in a china shop, and he will not shut the fuck up. And honestly, like, I admit that I have probably a really serious case of Trump derangement syndrome, but even like the average normie American who doesn't follow this stuff as, you know, closely as you and I, they have to be turned off by that. Like, that was insufferable.
I felt differently. Now, I sort of, for me personally, I thought it was clear that you know, it was a terrible debate. Both of them were fairly bad. They were not, Trump brought the bravado and the showmanship, but did not bring any content, obviously. And Biden was prepared for the content, but really showed no enthusiasm or even fight in trying to even push back against Trump, as Trump just would roll over him with those two features I just mentioned, bravado and showmanship. You know, obviously, I think some sane people will watch this and say Joe Biden clearly was at least the more professional, I guess, in terms of not interrupting, trying to speak as a cordial human being would. I mean, he obviously slipped at times, and those times I felt that Biden was actually the most authentic and most relatable when he I believe he called Trump a clown at one point, and he told him to shut the hell up, man. He immediately, I think, apologized both times for saying that. Like, ooh, I accidentally
did he?
I accidentally snapped. But I mean, I felt like that's what you needed to do in this scenario. But at the same time, there is a large percentage of this country that loves the strongman persona, just loves the fact that Trump, or anyone really, when they put on that type of show and don't let anyone step on them, and they think that's what presents a good president, someone who's just strong, so they don't fuck with the U.S., you know? And I don't subscribe to that. I think that's bullshit, but stepping out of my shoes and into those people's shoes, I can see how someone would watch this and say, man, Trump was great tonight.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you're totally right. Like, I don't agree. Like, that's not something that I want. Like, I mean, you want strength as a quality and a leader. But, you know, the way that Americans really value it above even substance sometimes is a little bit irritating. But I'm kind of like torn on this, and maybe we can talk through it. Like, definitely Donald Trump, traditionally, he appeared strong. But at the same time, I feel as if Biden, he wasn't necessarily a pushover. Like, Trump was talking over him, but Biden was not necessarily standing up to Donald Trump, but not backing down. And maybe Americans could interpret that as, oh, well, you know, he stood up to a bully. Also, you know, it's possible that Donald Trump isn't reading the room properly. And this is what I tweeted out as kind of like my overall, you know, perception of this debate. And again, this, I feel like it's really difficult to like definitively say this person won, this person lost. But like the way that I see it is like, if this were 2016, I think Trump would have really been riding high after this debate. But in 2020, when the mood is completely different and the scenario, you know, or the crises that we're facing is completely different, like I feel as if Trump isn't necessarily reading the room enough. Now, maybe it's just me. I'm fully willing to admit that, you know, I'm biased and I hate Donald Trump. But, you know, I don't know, you know, how many people are going to see that and be turned off by Donald Trump because, you know, he's a bomb thrower at a time when we need someone to exhibit actual leadership skills. It's tough because, you know, you want to be strong. You want to make sure that you don't back down. But at the same time, you do want to reassure people that everything is going to be okay when people are genuinely scared right now. So it's really, really tough. I think that you can, like, if you support Trump, you can create a narrative to where he was the winner. If you support Biden, you can do the same thing. But overall, I kind of feel like Joe Biden, he wasn't like, this wasn't a great performance. I think that when he went up against Bernie head to head, he did better.
Right.
But I think that you could make the argument that maybe he won by default, if I'm correct in saying that people aren't really, you know, desiring someone like Donald Trump, who is strong, but a little bit too belligerent for them. This is really tough because I think it's subjective mostly.
Right. I mean, I do think Joe Biden, in terms of, you know, who won the debate, I think, you know, Joe Biden won the debate because Trump came off as unhinged at multiple points in the debate. However, at the same time, Trump's style definitely shook Joe Biden. Joe Biden was out of it for a large portion of the debate. And again, when it comes to just like, you know, slinking back and not really putting yourself out there versus just unhinged rants, the person who's just sitting back is going to look better. But still, like, they were like, listen, Trump had a quip for everything. It doesn't matter if the quip was smart. They were mostly very dumb. It also doesn't matter if the quip made any sense. They were mostly completely nonsensical. But he had a comeback for every sentence, practically, that Joe Biden would say. And Joe Biden was just caught off guard and didn't know how to handle it. And again, there are people who are going to see that as like, oh, Joe, you know, Trump is very commanding, knows how to take control of a situation, whereas Biden was lost. And you know, it, to some people, it'll look like that. But you know, I Trump was just throwing out anything. And the difference this time, like you mentioned, with 2016, this probably would have been a good debate for him in 2016, like you said. But to me, the difference this time is he's the incumbent. There's a record now. He's the guy in charge. Being anti-establishment doesn't work when you've been the guy running the show for the past 4 years? It doesn't make any sense to blame anyone for what's going on right now because the buck stops with you. I mean, to me, the most telling part of everything, I mean, to, where he was completely, where he tried to do everything that we just talked about at once, and he just came off looking really stupid, if you ask me. When you combine the unhingedness with just talking nonsensically, with just trying to have a quip for everything, is when Trump was the one who brought up the Obama administration's response to the swine flu. In what world would Trump be the one wanting to bring that up? It doesn't make any sense. If Joe Biden says 200,000 people died under your pandemic due to your pandemic response, you don't go, "Oh yeah, what's larger than 200,000? The 14,000 who died under your pandemic response." Oh no, that's significantly less people. I mean, why would you bring that up unless you just needed to have a comeback and that's the only thing you had? Like, you didn't have anything else. It didn't make any sense for Trump to be the person to bring that up.
Yeah, you and I tweeted about this at exactly the same time, because as soon as, like, I tweeted, "Oh my God, he just brought up swine flu," you did the same thing, because it's unbelievable. Like, if I were Joe Biden, I would be bringing up swine flu to boast about how I dealt with these sorts of situations. The fact that Trump brought that up, it was like a genuine facepalm moment. The thing about Joe Biden is he just kind of needed to give Donald Trump enough rope to hang himself. And you could argue that maybe he did a little bit, but at the beginning of the debate, like maybe the first 15 minutes, it looked really bad for Joe Biden, because you can tell he came prepared, but immediately Trump rocked it. Like, he rocked him. Like, he was, kind of stumbling over his words. He looked a little bit just out of it at first. But I think that, you know, throughout the course of the debate, he kind of found his mojo. And he had some really good moments. And, like, to me, the way that I view this is, since Biden is the one ahead, really Trump is the one who is expected to perform, unless Biden, like, faceplants and has, like, a Michael Bloomberg, you know, level of a debate that's that bad. I don't think this debate will necessarily change the outcome of it. And this debate is especially important because it's the first one and so many people are tuning in and they may not watch other debates. They're just kind of curious to see how these two interact with one another. So I think that so long going into this, this was my thinking, as long as Biden doesn't like completely blow it, I think that not enough will change. And I kind of leave thinking, all right, I don't think that, you know, Biden blew it. In fact, I think that he had some good moments, but, you know, having said that, I think that people are going to appreciate the fact that Trump really did have a comeback for everything. And even if he was just talking and just saying words and wasn't really connecting the noises, you know, coming out of his mouth to things in his brain, you know, people value that because it seems like he's prepared, you know, not necessarily prepared in the traditional sense, like he prepped for the debate, but he knows exactly what he wants. He's decisive. And I think that's another quality that people, you know, they look for in a leadership. But at the same time, Trump, he ends up talking so much that he contradicts himself. So, for example, like, he hit Joe Biden on the crime bill, and then he said, "You called black youth super predators," when that was actually Hillary Clinton. Right. But then right after that, he immediately was criticizing Joe Biden for not being tough enough on crime, saying, "You won't even say the words law and order." So, I mean, he couldn't stop talking. And, you know, if you are going to be a good debater, aggression is an attribute that you want, but you've got to know when to stop. And Trump did not know when to stop. There was never a moment where he, like, tuned out and let Biden speak, let Biden have a gaffe or a brain fart. He kind of saved Biden a couple of times,
right,
when Biden was, you know, about to trail off and, you know, just not necessarily be able to finish a thought, as I just did, ironically. But, like, you know, Trump would jump in and then Biden would respond to that. So, like, Trump's debate style in this debate, I don't think it necessarily was conducive to him actually proving that he's competent. Like, as you said, I think it came off as unhinged. And, like, I'm curious to know what, like, the average person is going to think about this, you know, not necessarily like the undecided, the coveted, like, independent, but, like, what just normal people who don't follow this for a living think about this? Because, you know, again, like, I can't get out of my head that this is such a different time than 2016, to where Donald Trump, you know, as you said, he is the incumbent. He's defending his record this time. It's not the other way around with Hillary Clinton, who just came out of Obama's administration as Secretary of State. Like, you've got to explain why we are currently in an economic recession. You've got to explain why 200,000 people died. And his response to that was, oh, well, 2 million would have died under you if you were president. What?
You can't even put...
That's not persuasive.
Right, you can't say that. You don't know. You don't know. There's no way to quantify that. How can you say that? But, you know...
Yeah.
I mean, I think they both did what they set out to do. I think Biden just set out to look like the competent return to normalcy, whatever that is, president. And I think, you know, he sort of accomplished that just by not being Trump. And I think Trump accomplished what he set out to do, and that was to just basically control the terms of the debate. Because if you're going to lose on the content, which he certainly did and was going to, and I think he knew that, then you just try to put on a show and make it look like you're the guy in charge and steer the conversation, which he clearly did. And that'll make his base very happy because they got a Trump performance, you know? Yeah. I mean, again, the moderator, that's where he should have came in and done his job. And Chris Wallace absolutely did not do his job. He was really bad at tonight. I mean, we were all...
He was intimidated by Donald Trump. Like, you can feel the way he, you know, interacted. It was uncomfortable. Like, he didn't want to anger Donald Trump. And when he was assertive, it was really, like, awkward. Like, he had to really work up the courage to, like, speak out against Donald Trump. And it was bizarre.
Right. And literally, who cares about what Donald Trump thinks about you? I mean, come on. Like, this is... You're the moderator. I mean, you are the one who needs to... They should be... Look cowering at you. I mean, frankly, that's how this works. But it was just there was just a point where it was so off the wall, where there was no complete sentences even being formed by either candidate, because it was Biden's. This is like right at the beginning when it was Biden's turn to speak after Trump just had his monologue practically, and literally every other word Biden said, Trump would just talk over him. It was just going back and forth. And then Chris Wallace jumped in and tried to take control of the situation, which just caused Trump to talk over Wallace. I mean, just, it was just insanity. No one could just step up and just take control of the situation. It was just a really bad overall debate. And I mean, what is the point of these debates really? The idea, you know, before this, what were conservatives all day? Conservatives were going nuts about a couple of conspiracy theories. One was that Joe Biden was going to show up with a secret earpiece hidden in his ear, and his campaign was going to be feeding him the answers. And then the other conspiracy going around was that Joe Biden secretly was sent the questions of the debate tonight before the debate. What does that even matter? Like, it's obviously not true. These are ridiculous conspiracies, but what would that even matter? These aren't debates where it's like there's questions and you have to get them right. It's literally just like you can say whatever the fuck you want. Like, it doesn't even matter. There's no right or wrong answers in terms of like the moderator is going to buzz you and go, oh, 200 points deducted from Joe Biden. Like, what are they going to whisper into Joe Biden's ear? What, like, oh, just by the way, you should call Trump a jackass here. Like, there's no, like, no, these debates are completely meaningless in terms of actually anything substantial. We watch it because they're shows, and this is how I look at it. I view how the regular the common everyday American citizen is going to watch, and they are not going to view it the way I just explained it. They're going to view it as, well, this must be an important thing that is part of our politics, and I'm going to watch and try to form an opinion about these two individuals based on this debate. I mean, that's not what you should be doing. These debates are not for that, judging by what you saw tonight, especially.
Yeah. You know, it's basically like everything that both of them said, nothing was new. Like, everything was already predetermined in terms of like what they were going to say. Like, they used the same exact talking points. We already know that Trump, you know, when it comes to COVID-19, would bring up his ban on China and how, you know, Biden wouldn't have done that. Like, we know exactly what they were going to say. And so the thing about what was I going to say? I'm kind of losing my train of thought because that was so overwhelming. In terms of like the sheer chaos of it all, I came expecting exactly what we got, but even still, I wasn't ready for it because it was so unhinged. And like it a couple of people, you know, noted online that it reminded them of what you'd see in a failed state. Like there's just it's just chaos. And I don't know how someone who was genuinely undecided between Trump and Biden can watch that and take away anything. Like what substance was there that was discussed? Anything that Donald Trump said was either bizarre or contradictory or unhinged. And anything that Biden said was really a response to Donald Trump. And I think that there were some moments where like Biden looked at the camera and tried to like appeal directly to voters. And I think that maybe that resonates with some of those like old fashioned voters who really like, you know, decorum and don't like that Trump violates norms and hate his mean tweets. But I mean, the debate, I feel like it was pointless, especially because it was so demoralizing. Like after watching this, can anyone say that they feel more energized about this election and like the future? I mean, of course, everybody wants Donald Trump to be voted out of office. Everybody's motivated for that who's watching this anyways. But it's like, do we feel optimistic about America regardless of the outcome after watching this? And to me, the answer is no. I feel crushed. Like this is soul crushing stuff here.
Right. And I mean, that's actually the real point of these debates at where we are now in terms of what you just said. I mean, there really isn't anyone watching these debates who's choosing between Biden and Trump. I mean, if you're someone mm-hmm. who's that unengaged with politics, you're probably not going to sit down and watch the debate. Mm-hmm. This is more to get the Democrat who's not too excited about Biden and may sit this one out to vote. This is about getting the Trump voter who, you know, either A, isn't happy with him because he didn't promise all of the populist stuff he delivered. You know, if you were a blue-collar mm-hmm. worker in the Midwest or something, and that was your reason for jumping from Obama to Trump. Or if you're the other Trump voter, you know, this is Trump's way of trying to get you out there to vote for him, by him assuring that, no, I promise you, I am still racist enough. Come out and vote for me. Mm-hmm. White supremacist who's upset that I haven't given you the all-white nation that you thought I was going to bring. You know, I mean, that's really what these debates are about. It's about trying to excite the people who you think should come out and vote for you. But yeah, this was really, whew.
It was a shit show.
Right. Let's talk about this. Well, first, actually, I don't even know if I, because usually the intro to the show does this for me. Ladies and gentlemen, you're watching Doomed with Matt Binder.
And, the show is so appropriate. The title, I swear.
A half an hour into the program, this is what you're watching. If you're on the YouTube live stream right now, youtube.com/Matt Binder, I will take the YouTube live chat questions, and me and Mike will answer them. You could just drop a super chat right there in the live chat, and I'll get to them. There's a few. But first, let me ask you this. What were some standout moments for you? Because I have a few, and they were all not like this. You know, usually it's like, oh, this was a part where like it got really heated and the conversation got really emotional or got really they got really angry. No, these were my standout moments were literally just some of these one-off quips that were just so insane and bizarre that they're engraved in my head now. But go ahead. What were some standout moments for you?
Yeah, I agree. Like the Trump quips, like there's so many of them that, you know, stood out in my mind. I'm a little bit excited that he brought back the wrong. I think Kyle Kulinski tweeted about this. It's back, wrong. Like it was such an iconic moment. And it's like become a meme. And I just think it was funny, albeit stupid. To me, like the biggest moment of the night, and maybe this is the biggest moment to me because it was like at the end, so it left, you know, the last impression, was when Trump, one, wouldn't condemn white supremacy, and two, told, you know, right-wing protesters to stand down and stand by. And then at the very last part, he said that he would not commit to telling his supporters to be peaceful. In fact, he would urge them to watch the polls. This is really scary stuff. And like, I think that it's easy for people to dismiss when Trump says things that are dangerous, because oftentimes the media does take these anti-Trump stories and, you know, they sensationalize them because Trump is a moneymaker for the media. But this is one of those times where what he's saying really warrants a lot of concern, because, like, not necessarily because I'm worried that Donald Trump would cling to power. I mean, sure, he could cheat if we take the story from The Atlantic seriously, which we should, but because of what can happen on the streets, like if his people actually do take up arms. I mean, I'm in Portland, Oregon, where we've seen a lot of this this chaos unfold. And what I've seen is, like, for example, these, I don't know if they're Proud Boys, but they're far right militias. They show up to communities who are doing these small Black Lives Matter marches, and they stand there with guns to, quote unquote, stop them from looting or discourage looting. You know, when we had the wildfires a week or so back, they were setting up these illegal checkpoints in Oregon, stopping people from fleeing the wildfires, you know, to stop the violence. So, I mean, like, these people are already primed to believe that the left is going to do something bad. So for him to not, like, actively discourage it means that they're already going to do it. But when you encourage it, like, that is scary to me. Like, I don't, like, I'm not going to say, you know, pretend to be Chicken Little and say, oh, this is going to devolve into a civil war, because I'm not that cynical yet. But still, the fact that you see these clashes more and more become a common thing, that is scary, right? You know, and it's an effect that Trump is going to have long after he's gone. Like, this polarization and the subsequent galvanization because of Donald Trump, this isn't going to go away. Like, this type of far right versus, you know, the Black Lives Matter protests and just Democrats in general is going to exist for the foreseeable future. And it's really scary. Like, it's a lasting gift that Trump is leaving us.
Right. Right. I mean, that was the biggest moment from the debate when Trump was asked to denounce white supremacist groups. And he specifically asked what specific groups, and the Proud Boys came up. And so he was asked to denounce the Proud Boys, and he told the Proud Boys to stand back and stand by. And then he immediately pivoted to, but somebody's got to do something about Antifa. I mean, A, that wasn't a condemnation of the Proud Boys, obviously. Stand back and stand by actually tells them to please do stick around and wait for the right moment to do something. And then C, he segues right into someone's got to do something about Antifa. I mean, the message is pretty clear to the Proud Boys. In fact, there are screenshots going around social media right now from different Telegram groups that the Proud Boys have, because they've been banned from most major social media platforms. So they have their own little private Telegram groups. And they are really proud of, they are the Proud Boys, but they're really proud of what Donald Trump did tonight. And they are basically using the stand back and stand by line now as part, they've like absorbed it into their insignia, and they have like logos already created that say stand back and stand by.
Jeez. And stand by for what? The election results, if he says that it's fraudulent, which he definitely will do.
Right.
And I mean, it's like he wants violence, and I genuinely think he does.
Right. And then that was the other big moment. And you mentioned that too, where he said that obviously he wants people going into the polls and watching. But see, the whole idea of a poll watcher is that an unbiased party, just a person. I mean, obviously, yes, the parties usually send someone, but they don't send someone like flanked out in like Joe Biden gear, waving a Joe Biden flag with the other groups of rowdy Joe Biden supporters. The whole point is you go completely like unconspicuously, just dressed like in a plain shirt, jeans or whatever, just as a, like, not a partisan. And you just make sure everything's going right, so you then report to the electoral board if you see anything shady going on or anything going wrong in general. If it's not purposeful, you know, there's accidental sort of technical glitches and difficulties all the time. But what Trump is asking for is for literally his supporters to go in groups waving their flags, donning their Trump hats to go into the polls. I mean, it's actually against the law for you to campaign a certain amount of feet. Like, literally, it's against the law to campaign a certain distance around an electoral site. And I wouldn't surprise me if Trump didn't get that. But obviously, he also wouldn't care, and neither do the Republican Party or his campaign. They are openly asking his supporters to do something that goes against what is they're authorized to do.
Yeah, it's voter intimidation. And imagine if, like, the shoe were on the other foot and Joe Biden said, listen, we know that, you know, Trump's supporters are going to cheat. So I need all of the Antifa protesters in your area to go into the poll booths and you need to watch the Trump support. Like, there would be screaming, rightfully so, because there's a reason why we have these types of laws where you can't campaign within 100 or 500 feet within a polling station. It's because people need to be able to make their vote, not feel pressured, not feel intimidated. And Trump is trying to subvert that. Like, this is literally what we see in authoritarian regimes. I mean, it's one of the things that we see. But, you know, you'd think that there would be at least more condemnation of this from the media. And I get that they talk about this to an extent. But I mean, the president of the United States, who is the incumbent, is literally promoting voter intimidation. Like, this is a really big issue. And again, like, I understand that people tend to not necessarily take the media seriously because corporate media oftentimes is incredibly biased and they profit off of these Trump stories, right? But this is serious. Like, this is different. Like, if you want a functioning democracy, or you want a democracy to function, I should say, you can't have this. Like, people shouldn't feel intimidated to vote.
Right.
Otherwise, right. That's, I mean, I don't know what to say. It's obviously undemocratic.
Right. I mean, if the Trump campaign wants to sign up a bunch of volunteers to go out and watch the polls, and they actually, it's an actual, like, legitimate setup thing, which obviously, I mean, I'm sure the campaign wouldn't do because they don't care about that, really. But if they actually put together an actual poll watching hired actual poll watchers to go to the polls and make sure that there weren't any problems with the machines or anything like that, then welcome to do that. No one's saying they can't do that. But again, that's not what they're asking to happen. You know, they're openly saying that groups of their supporters should show up and intimidate people. Yeah, it was a real, I mean, he's definitely going to want the Supreme Court to decide the election. It's
oh, totally. Yeah,
it's going to be quite the shit show, because we know where that's going to. Will the Supreme Court openly just, even if Biden has even if Biden wins completely, like not even a close electoral college win, not even a close popular vote win, will the Supreme Court really throw caution to the wind and try to overturn that? I don't know. I mean,
you know, and
the question for me, if it's close, isn't hard. Like, if it's close, they'll have no problem because they'll just say there was a few votes here, a few votes there. They weren't legitimate. They were, they're thrown out. But if the vote is so separated, and you know, Biden wins some of these states that some pollsters are saying he might win, that Democrats usually don't win. I mean, if it gets to that point, how are you going to overturn that? I mean, not hard for them to actually do, but how are you going to do that and try to maintain any sort of legitimacy? I mean, I could see no greater reason to completely dismantle and reform and pack the courts when the Dems get in power if the Supreme Court tries to pull this shit off, you know?
Yeah, if they do another Bush v. Gore within decades.
But you know what? I'm not even talking about Bush v. Gore where it was close, and it really just came down to a state, and in that state, just a couple hundred votes or whatever. I'm not even talking about that. I'm talking about like tens to hundreds of thousands of votes difference, even millions maybe, and also an electoral college win that throws that turns red states blue, and Dems hold on to all the usual blue states. How are they going to say all that is illegitimate? You know?
Yeah, I feel like they can't if it's, you know, if Joe Biden has enough of a cushion. But there's basically like a number of ways where things can go wrong and the Supreme Court can, in fact, intervene. I mean, if we see the scenario come to fruition that was talked about in The Atlantic by Barton Gellman, then I could see the Supreme Court intervening where, you know, you have a situation where, let's say, Biden wins a couple of swing states just really close, and Trump says, you know what, he didn't actually win, I won because of fraud, so I'm going to have these Republican controlled legislatures appoint electors to send to the Electoral College. Biden can then dispute that could quickly go to the Supreme Court, and then you have people like Brett Kavanaugh, Justice Roberts, and if confirmed, Amy Coney Barrett, all previously, like, they worked on Bush v. Gore. Like, some of them advised, you know, Jeb Bush, at least Kavanaugh did. I don't know what specifically Amy Coney Barrett did, but she was part of that in some way. She's been trying to hide that. It came up, I think, at a Senate judicial hearing a few years ago. But, I mean, these are all people who I think would ultimately decide to undermine the will of voters. So I think that if it is close, it's going to be chaotic. Right. There's a number of ways it's going to be chaotic. Even if it's not close, like, we could have the Red Mirage scenario where Trump looks to be in the lead on election night and then, you know, declares victory. But then as more and more mail-in ballots come in, Biden ends up pulling ahead, and then he says fraud, and then people take to the streets. Like, it's really scary. It's like, I'm excited for this election to be over, but for the first time, I'm genuinely terrified at what's going to happen. Because either way, like, I feel like the result is going to produce chaos. Either way, like, if we kick Donald Trump out of office, that's going to lead to chaos. If he stays in power, that's going to be four more years of chaos. It's just, no matter what happens, we have to be fearful. And that's really fucking irritating, because, like, an election should be a time when people are, like, I mean, theoretically encouraged in a democracy, but everyone is, like, shitting themselves. And I think rightfully so.
Right. You know, it is. I think regardless of what happens, I feel the same way. It's going to be a really bad time in this country. I think, you know, especially if Trump loses, we're going to see a very loud far right. We're going to see the conspiracy theorists get even louder, too. QAnon will certainly turn into a more in-person and visible movement, I think.
Yeah, I agree.
I think it's going to get bad. But obviously, Trump, Trump losing the presidency will also result in some good. In terms of, you know, basically the Trump administration not being in power anymore. So I think, you know, we'll take the fringe movements.
I'll take the chaos.
Yeah, we'll take the chaos and deal with it, you know. But I mean, the entire Bush legal team has been rewarded with lifetime seats in the Supreme Court, it seems, doesn't it? Right. It is depressing. I mean, I don't know how else to put it. We are really in the worst case scenario. I mean, a Trump presidency, a once-in-a-100-year pandemic, a conservative Supreme Court is about to happen. I mean, a completely conservative, a 6-3 conservative Supreme Court.
6-3.
Yeah, it's going to be, I mean, everything that was warned about is, as the worst-case scenario, has come to fruition. And we are already into it, but we are in for even more of it. But to try to lighten the mood, I guess, so that we're not all doomed all the time in this show. There are some lines that that really stuck out to me that I had to just quickly jot down so I could bring them up on here. And some of these were just so bizarre. And well, first of all, this one stuck out to me, and it's not really, this one wasn't his more insane one in terms of it just being off the wall, but this one is extremely incorrect. And it was when Trump said, when the stock markets go up, that means jobs. I mean, excuse me one second. Jeez, I made myself laugh into a coughing fit. I mean, we know that's absolutely not the case. We've seen that multiple times, that when stocks go up, that doesn't mean jobs. That just means the very rich and wealthy are doing really, really good. And maybe some people who have 401ks made a couple of nickels and dimes. You know, we're not talking like all of a sudden everyone's rich because the stock market goes up. I mean, there's a vast number of people in this country, myself included, actually, where really the stock market doesn't matter to me one single bit because I have no skin in the game. So I get nothing.
I'm zero.
Yeah. So also, we know that doesn't mean jobs either, because all of a sudden, just because the very rich and wealthy and people have 401ks who usually when they, you know, usually when he, that's the thing too. People who have 401ks aren't seeing that money up front and in their hand at that moment for the most part. I mean, unless they cash out. But, you know, they're, it's just, oh, good, you have some wealth in the background somewhere. You know, it's the same thing as saying you got some money on paper, you know, until you got the cash. That's not spending money. And so if that money isn't being put into the economy, which we know, obviously, the very rich and wealthy do not do, they just save that money and hoard it, then why would that mean jobs? It doesn't. There's no, why would McDonald's just start hiring more people if no more people are going to McDonald's to spend money? They're not as busy. They're not more busy. It's just a dumb way of thinking. And, I mean, it's not surprising from him, I guess, but just come on.
Yeah, I actually thought that Biden surprisingly had a good rebuttal to that when he said something to the effect of, you know, what that means. I don't know if he was responding directly to the stocks, but he like spoke to that in the sense that he talked about how, you know, during COVID-19, the people who did the best are millionaires and billionaires. Now, we know that they're still going to do fine under Joe Biden, but the fact that he like called that out, I think like the optics are good. But I will say, like, in terms of Trump's stupidity, I'm really disappointed. I don't know if anyone else is, when they were talking about the recovery and the shape of the recovery, and Joe Biden believes in it's a K-shaped recovery because Wall Street's doing the best or whatever. And Biden or Trump believes it's a V-shaped recovery. And usually whenever he says this, like, he'll say it's a super V, super V. And I was really hoping that he would do that on the debate stage because it makes him sound really stupid. Because why wouldn't you just say capital V? But I was hoping that he would say that. We did get some of the Trump greatest hits. Again, he said wrong. I mean, I'm glad that he brought that back. He didn't say fake news. I don't think anyways, which was a little bit disappointing. So, I mean, he's losing his game. I think he's trying to come up with some new stuff. But he doesn't have, like, I don't know. It's less funny last time. Like
one really good line when Biden brought up that story in the Times where Trump apparently only paid $750 in taxes the year he ran for president and the year after, where the first year of his presidency as well. He started saying how that's not true, and he paid more than in that in taxes and how he's got lots of money and he's rich. But one line that stuck out to me is he goes, the assets are extremely good. What does that even mean? The assets are extremely good. What? The assets are extremely good. What? Just another, was really like, you know, he was just throwing out lines wherever he felt like he needed to just interject so he could hear his own voice. So much of this stuff didn't make sense. This is the only time I actually laughed during debate for real. I just couldn't believe it. Biden brings up that, it's in the coronavirus section of the debate. And Biden brings up how Trump goes against the CDC and doesn't even believe the coronavirus is a real thing. It's a hoax. He doesn't believe wearing masks. And Trump tries to go, no, that's not true at all. And he pulls out his own mask and says, no, I wear my mask when I need to. And he's trying to talk up that he sees the importance of masks. But then he immediately goes into, I guess he realizes that his base, who is very anti-mask because of what he's previously said, would think it was weird that all of a sudden Trump is pro-mask. He had to tone it down, and he goes, you know, but I don't really wear it all the time. I only wear it when it seems necessary. Not like that Joe Biden who wears it all the time. And then he goes in the most quintessential Trump type phrasing. But it doesn't make sense when talking about a cloth face mask. He goes, Joe Biden wears the biggest mask I've ever seen. What does that? Does Joe Biden wear like a face mask that covers his entire body? Is Joe Biden wearing a face shawl? What is going on here? Am I missing out on something? Did I not see Joe Biden wearing the Guinness Book of World Records largest mask of all time? What does that even mean?
Yeah, and as if that's supposed to be bad. It's like, as long as he's wearing a fucking mask, I don't give a shit. It just, he says things that are so off the wall that, like, I feel like, and maybe this is just my own social circle, that it was funny in 2016, and sometimes it's funny. Like, sometimes it could be funny. But now it's like, all right, dude, cut it out. This shit is annoying. We're over it. It's kind of funny sometimes. It depends. But, like you're not being funny now. It's not cute.
I'm honestly now picturing, like, Biden pulling out this really long cloth thing, like how a magician just pulls out that never-ending handkerchief. But, like, one side is, like, the little thing to put around your ear for the mask. And he literally, like, puts on one side, and then he starts wrapping it around his entire body until he runs out of cloth and he's like a mummy. And then he just hooks the other little side on his other ear. And there you go. The world's largest mask. I mean, what does that even mean? Joe Biden wears the biggest mask I've ever seen. I mean, buddy, I mean... I guess you should have workshopped that one a bit before going out there on stage and performing that in front of an audience, right?
Yeah. I feel like he, like, at these rallies that he does, he gets, like, this false sense of security because they think everything that he says is brilliant. So he'll just, like, he'll bring that to, like, a normal press briefing, like a White House press briefing or now a debate. And I don't know if he said that before, but, like, the things that he says, he'll repeat himself a lot. This is what Trump does. And he doesn't realize that, like, his supporters are basically going to eat up everything that he says. It doesn't matter what he says. He could tell all of them to literally eat shit, and they'd probably laugh and be like, oh, he's so anti-establishment. That's funny. Democrat would never say this.
You know, here's the thing, though, and I want to make this clear. You know, when I say I laugh at what Trump says, I had a little debate, actually, last time I was on the Majority Report when I was co-hosting last Thursday with Matt and Jamie of the Majority Report. You know, he's not being funny on purpose. Like, he's not being a jokester and kid. Like, he is unintentionally funny. Like,
exactly.
Like, what he says literally comes to his mind, and he thinks he's making a good point, or he thinks he's owning somebody when he says these things. He's not being like a ha ha sarcastic comedian type deal. They thought otherwise. They think he knows what he's doing. Listen, I think he's a showman in terms of he knows what performs. But I don't think he knows he's delivering a good line. He just knows how to perform. But he's not like, oh, I got a really funny one. Wait till they hear this. Like, he's literally just performing exactly what he believes and exactly what comes to mind. Like,
oh, yeah.
Like, it's not like, I'm gonna crack a joke here. It's literally like, oh, the people want to hear me say this. I don't know why, but they love it, so here it goes. You know? It's
yeah.
You know, it's...
He's his own biggest fan, and I agree with your assessment. I think that, like, sure, he definitely knows how to play a crowd. Nobody is disputing that, because he was a celebrity. He was a reality television show star before he became president. But, like, he absolutely... like, the things that he says, I think they are mostly unintentionally hilarious most of the time. I don't think he plans to be funny. It depends. Sometimes you can tell. But when he's trying to be funny, he's usually not funny. Like, it's when he says something stupid, that's when it really, to me, it does make me laugh.
Yeah. Like, when he said Joe Biden has the biggest mask he's ever seen. Well, I can't get that. I think that line will, you know what? When I die, I want that on my tombstone. Joe Biden has the biggest mask I've ever seen. I'm just going to... It's not even my own quote. I just want that. I just think it's the funniest thing I have heard in quite some time because it's so stupid. It doesn't mean a thing. That's not even a correct criticism for a mask. You could say that he overwears it, that he wears it inside when he's just with his wife if you want to, like, point him out as some, like... super scared, afraid of his own shadow type thing. Like, I think that's dumb and wrong, but it makes sense from that point of view that, you know, I see people mocking, you know, obviously, I think you shouldn't wear a mask when you're driving in your car because I've heard people, you know, it gets hot in a car. But the idea that you would somehow say a mask is too big, I mean, I don't know. I feel like I'm way too into this. I'm enough with the mask being big. it's really fucked with my whole night, hasn't it? All right, okay.
You got stuck on it. It's easy to get stuck on some of these things because it's like it's so stupid that you have to like take portions of it and dissect it because it's so unreal.
Right. Okay, let's move on to something else that I just remembered. There was a really funny moment where Trump is talking about how he is the one who lowered drug prices, and that's why he's the best on healthcare. And he attacks Joe Biden for saying how, you know, you and Obama could have lowered drug prices during your administration, but you were too afraid to, and that's because I'm the only one who's brave enough to take on Big Pharma. And then no longer than 2 or 3 minutes later, they bring up the coronavirus vaccines, and Biden says how they're being rushed because Trump wants to use them as a political prop, which is true, and how he isn't trusted. Mm-hmm. And then Trump goes, oh, you don't trust Johnson & Johnson? You don't trust Pfizer? These are the groups you just said you were taking on. What do you mean all of a sudden you're their biggest supporters? Are you kidding me? Like, just another moment of him. Like, this is the same thing with the law enforcement thing, where one moment he's Mr. Law and Order, and the second moment he's Mr. All of a sudden talking about criminal justice reform or whatever. It doesn't make any sense.
Mm-hmm. He wants to be, like, a populist and the establishment at the same time. Like, he wants to be everything at once. And that can work to an extent for a candidate if, you know, some people aren't paying attention, if they're tuning out portions of this election. But he did all of this in, like, one debate. Like, it was multiple approaches that he took to the same issue, like opposing sides on one issue in one debate multiple times for multiple issues. And that's not going to work. Like, I think that some people might miss some of this, but a lot of people are going to pick up on that. They're going to pick up on the fact that, oh, wait, didn't he just say that Joe Biden was too tough on crime and now he's hitting Biden because he's not saying law and order? Like, you only have so much wiggle room to where people are going to realize, okay, this guy's full of shit. He's, like, taking both sides of every single issue. He's Pete Buttigieging it. And people right. See through that.
Now let's move on to this and have the perfect segue. It's another moment where Trump is talking out both sides of his ass. I want to segue into the centering of the left during this debate. Amazing how a debate between centrist Joe Biden and right-winger Donald Trump, the left was such a big topic. I mean, we really are taking over the country if that's the case. I mean, we couldn't win the primary, but we certainly are winning in other ways. But here's the moment where, you know, it's so hilarious. And he does this all the time. Now, Mike, Joe Biden is controlled by the left. He is just a puppet to the very radical left wing of the Democratic Party. That's it. Everything he says and does, straight from our mouth, Mike. However, somehow the things we are telling Joe Biden to say is causing Joe Biden to lose the very radical left that is also somehow controlling him. We got to stop telling Joe Biden to say those, not even telling, we have to stop making Joe Biden say those things that hurt our feelings, Mike. Don't you agree? Mm-hmm. I mean,
yeah.
Does he really like think what he's saying? I mean, first of all, I wish this Joe Biden existed. This Joe Biden that was kowtowing to the left and we were in complete control of. Sadly, that's not the case. There was another moment where Trump said to Joe Biden, you better watch out for Antifa because they'll come to overthrow you too.
Right.
Don't threaten me with a good time, Trump. I mean, please. I mean, that would be real. I mean, I wish what was going on in the Republican mind of how they see the Democratic Party was really going on, because it's a dream, man. It's a dream.
Yeah, if Biden and Kamala Harris were half as radical as Trump and the Republicans claim, they would be so awesome. Like, I would enthusiastically be voting for them and thinking that, like, oh my God, like, this is going to mean something. Like, I have hope. They're actually going to do all these things. But what I noticed is that Trump was trying to, like, quarter Joe Biden. And maybe it worked, maybe it didn't, where he'd say, well, you want socialism. You want socialism. And then he'd get Biden to admit, well, no, I don't support socialism. I want to expand the public option. And then he'd say, you just lost the left. You lost the left. And he did this again, like, for climate change, where Joe Biden said, I don't support the Green New Deal. And then he said, you just lost the left. So it's like we have two competing narratives, and I don't know which one he ultimately wants to go with. Did Joe Biden lose the left, or is he being controlled by the left? Like, you have to pick one. And these are things that are so contradictory, so obvious, that normal people, I think, will pick up on it. Like, it's not like the average voter is so stupid that they have to be, like, political strategists to pick up these little, like, these are, like, subtle things. These are really big contradictions that this moron keeps bringing up. And I think it was a little bit clever if Trump actually had a plan to bait Biden to, like, denounce Bernie Sanders, and he kind of did. Like, I beat Bernie Sanders. Sure, I get that you want him to do that because Bernie Sanders is popular. But at the same time, you're kind of like, you're saying, oh, well, you're being controlled by the left. I guess that means Bernie Sanders as well. But then it's like, well, you just lost the left. Like, I don't know. It just, it doesn't make sense to me why he thinks this. I don't think he's actually planning anything. I think he's just like spitting like a freestyle, and absolutely, just he's landing on different sides of the same issue.
Absolutely. I mean, he is just talking for the sake of hearing his own voice.
But it is
something. I mean, you know, in 2016, I think there was a strategy there, though. It was, again, he sort of did the same contradictory thing where, like, Hillary, the radical left of the Democratic Party is crazy, and Hillary's going to give them what they want. Yet at the same time, those people are going to come and vote for me. I mean, what?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, but yeah. But in 2016, at least the strategy there was, I'm the anti-establishment candidate in 2016. The anti-establishment voter could possibly vote for me. And there were a few of them that did. That's not the case this time around. Like, there's no, you know, there's no anti-establishment Trump. He is the very definition of the establishment. He's the president of the United States. The idea that Biden is both beholden to the left but also is going to lose the left is just not very well thought out. But it's a good, let's talk about this part of the conversation. Let's move from Trump. It's a good thing, you know, that we didn't get the Dems saved. Turned the car around when it looked like Bernie was gonna win, and you know, because otherwise, if Biden didn't win, man, we'd be hearing the Green New Deal being brought up in these debates. We'd be hearing Medicare for All being brought up in these debates. Without Bernie there, thank God those things weren't brought up at all. Otherwise, oof, who knows how that would have gone? Obviously, I'm being very sarcastic.
I know they're only like overwhelmingly popular. Yeah. And it's funny the way that, like, Trump, he seems to be, like, someone who follows all of the polls that at least show him, like, in the lead. But, like, Medicare for All is super popular. And I was hoping that Joe Biden would bring up the fact that Trump did actually say, oh, I support a universal health care plan. I think it was, like, a CBS interview where he said, you know, we're going to save so much money when he was asked how he's going to pay for it. Like, this was right after he was elected, but before he took office. Like, I'm blanking on, like, if it was CBS or ABC, but either way, like, if Trump or if Biden would have brought that up, I think that it would have at least showed that Trump is hypocritical and that Biden is more consistent, even though his policy on healthcare is dog shit. I mean, like, he kind of low-key backed away from a public option tonight, which... Oh, I mean, he said he supports it, but then
he didn't accurately describe a public option. He don't know what the hell he was doing.
Right, right.
I mean,
yeah, he, like, what he's describing isn't a public option. It's only the poorest people on like, okay, that's the ACA. That's not a public option.
Yeah, he was literally describing what's currently in place. Right.
Yeah. So, I mean, like, imagine if Bernie were up on the stage and Trump would say, oh, well, you know, you're a socialist. Like, Bernie would actually have a thoughtful response other than, no, I'm not, because Bernie Sanders, like, he actually knows what he's talking about. And Joe Biden is trying to walk this fine line where he doesn't want to piss off the left to an extent, But he also wants to be a centrist. He doesn't really want to do that much. I mean, sure, he'll tweak the ACA probably a little bit via executive orders, but his healthcare reform is garbage. It's dog shit. But with Bernie Sanders, like, he has the advantage because Medicare for All is popular. It even polls really well with a plurality of Republicans, sometimes a majority of Republicans. So it's such a missed opportunity. Like, rather than being on the defensive, Democrats could have, like, put Trump on the defensive with Bernie Sanders. And now here we are where Joe Biden can't even describe a public option, and Trump is still calling him a socialist. Like, it's almost as if no matter who was the nominee, the Republicans were just always going to call that person a socialist. And worrying about going too far left was not something that was beneficial for the Democratic Party. Like, seeing what could have been is so frustrating, because this could have been a Sanders-Trump debate, and it would have been so much better.
Right. I mean, I couldn't help but imagine that thing. While I was watching the debate, I couldn't imagine how, you know, that thing Bernie does during debates where someone will say something that is so, like, you know, I'm trying to think of an example, but honestly, I'm so tired, I can't think of a hypothetical scenario. So that thing where he would just basically go like, oh, you mean like this? Like, he would say, like, he would, like, sarcastically repeat what the person was saying. Oh, we couldn't afford Medicare for All, but we could afford your tax cut. Something like that, you know. I couldn't help but imagine Bernie pulling that off multiple times during the night. But, you know, at the same time, I feel like I really sort of backed off the Biden criticism for a bit, because I feel like at this point we're so close to the election and we just need to come to terms with what we got and just how bad Trump is. And it's almost like, you know, I totally get still criticizing the Dems and Joe Biden. You should continue to do that. But I think we should also keep our eye on the prize while doing that and realize the number one threat right now is the right. I think it's very easy for some, I see some people on the left who are still focused on a primary fight that's well and over with. And I think we need to, at least for the next month, we should move on. And then if you want to restart that primary fight on like November 4th or whatever the day after the election is, go ahead, you know?
Well, I mean, and it's like there's not nothing really new happening on the Democratic side. Right. Biden is Biden. He hasn't changed. And Trump is the one who's fucking up right now during a pandemic. He's the one who's becoming more authoritarian. So I think that it makes sense to focus your fire on Donald Trump. I mean, that doesn't necessarily mean that you pull punches for Joe Biden. But like right now, to criticize him for not supporting Medicare for All, to me, is meaningless, because, yeah, I already know he doesn't support Medicare for All, and it's fucking bullshit. But it's, you know, that's not where we're at. Bernie lost. So it's like we're either going to get Joe Biden, who will do some, you know, executive orders, or we're going to get Donald Trump, who in court is going to push for a repeal of the ACA, which means millions of people will lose their insurance. Protections for people with pre-existing conditions will go away. You know, it's frustrating. Like, I get the angst that people are feeling, because I feel that too. It's not like anyone is under this delusion that, you know, Joe Biden is going to be phenomenal. It's not necessarily what he will do as president, because I don't expect much. It's what he won't do. Like, I think that he'd not bungle COVID-19. You know, I don't think he would attack trans people and spread, you know, chaos before elections and not, you know, want to peacefully commit to a transfer of power. You know, so it's like the primary fight, I'm over it, because by this point, like, the anger from the primary, at least for me, has dissipated, and I'm more angry at Donald Trump because of everything that he's causing. Like, all of the chaos, the pandemic, fears over, you know, violence breaking out is because of what he's doing right now. So, I mean, I focus my fire where it needs to be focused, I feel like. And I think a lot of people should do that too if they actually want to get Trump elected or ejected.
Right.
Ooh, I'm really tired too, and this light is cooking me.
Yeah, I gotta say, I've never felt so worn out during one of these. Do you know what I mean? Like, I've been doing the primary debates. I've done these sort of things I was doing these back in like 2012 with Sam Cedar at the Majority Report, and that was, I would have to stay in Brooklyn and then go home afterwards really late at night, and, you know. But somehow tonight I'm more exhausted than I could ever remember being after one of these. Like, it was so exhausting to watch, and I just feel like they're so, like,
I'm drained.
I'm drained. That's the perfect, thank you. I'm drained, and I don't know how else to explain it. So maybe this is the perfect time to go to some super chats before calling it a night. Let's see what the people are saying. Oh, one of the YouTube commenters. This wasn't a super chat, but it caught my eye. Apparently, according to a Frank Luntz focus group, and I have no way of verifying this right now, but undecided voters in Frank Luntz's focus group now like Biden because Trump... Wait, a voter. I'm sorry, I misread this. A undecided voter now likes Biden because Trump was acting like a crackhead. Now, I don't know if that's just the YouTube commenter's color commentary or if the person actually said themselves that they now like Biden because Trump's a crackhead. But it stood out to me, so I needed to read that. Okay, so let's...
that's interesting.
Let's get to these super chats. Samantha with the super chat. Bernie wouldn't have let Trump shout him down. Yeah, I really don't know why Biden let Trump talk over him and he just let him. Like, yeah, there was one or two moments where he told him to shut up, but he really should have forcefully pushed back over and over again, even if they just were two blathering idiots. I mean, that's what ended up happening anyway, except it was Trump blathering at Biden and Biden just blathering at the metaphorical people in the room by talking to the camera. And I don't know, I think it would have looked a lot better if that blather was just going to push back against Trump instead of talking to no one who was there. Yeah, I hope the next time they tell him, listen, if Trump starts doing this, the content no longer matters. You need to just forcefully try to take control so it looks like you're controlling, so it looks like you're in charge of the conversation.
Yeah, I think that rather than like telling on Trump to the moderator, you know, saying, can I talk? If he just like stopped and like turned around and looked at Joe Biden and or looked at Donald Trump and said, you be quiet, or like, can I talk? Like something like that. Like people would have been like, oh, holy shit. Like he's amped up. Like that's natural. That's organic. I like that. It's strong. He needs to do something like that because it was insufferable. Like you couldn't understand what they were saying because Trump wouldn't shut the fuck up. It was infuriating. I really wish that Biden would have actually tried to take control. I agree.
Renee says, I prefer a violent overthrow. And Trump did a Q for a coup. It's a QAnon. I think Renee is making a QAnon joke that I'm too tired to get.
I'm getting more like Trump brained as this podcast goes on. And I feel like you are too because we're so tired and like drained of energy from this.
Right.
I can't even process shit.
Right. It is. Yeah. I've honestly never felt this way after a debate before. I feel like I might be forever stupider after tonight. Like people say that as as a joke, like, oh, watching that made me lose a few IQ points. No, I literally think that my brain activity dropped tonight. And I don't know if the parts of my brain that shut off will ever turn back on.
Yeah, if you like watch all of my post debate analyses, I was like so excited and just like, wow, that was great. That was fiery. Bernie brought I was like really hyped up, and now I'm just like, so the debate took place, should have happened. I'm fucking tired.
I mean, he was even better. He was even better at the debates with Hillary. I mean, yeah, he was, you know, still a shit show, but he wasn't constantly interrupting her for no, just to like hear himself talk. It was so bizarre. It was I don't know. Let's go back to the YouTube super chats. Zach says, once again, there's more evidence the DNC has screwed us. Oh, you mean tonight's debate, or are you talking about something else? I mean, I don't know. I can't. Like I said, I'm in no mood to 35 days, I think it is, until 34 now, being that it's now midnight on the East Coast. I'm not going to spend any time talking about the DNC right now. You know what I mean, Mike?
What I'll say to that is that... thanks, Obama, because sure, he got everyone to drop out and endorse Biden. Warren didn't drop out, you know, so the progressives split the vote. So that kind of created this perfect storm. But having said that, though, it wasn't over for Bernie. He should have adapted and started to really go in on Joe Biden more, but he didn't. So I kind of like I chalk this up as Bernie just kind of like he didn't do what he needed to win. Having said that, I feel you. It's a gut punch, and it just sucks because it's like he's the one that got away. And like seeing this debate is kind of like a little bit painful because it's like, imagine what could have been America. Right. But once again, it's like we get neoliberalism or neoliberalism plus fascism. And we're just, it's depressing. That's why I'm so tired, I think. It's not necessarily just like physically being drained. It's also like emotionally drained to where it's just like, okay, I've been beaten down. Like I'm dead inside. The system has thoroughly broken me. And this is where we're at. I just want it to be over. Put this election out of its misery. Just let's be over with it.
All right. Oh, there's some people in the chat who are unhappy with me saying that Trump was worse this time around than in the debates with Hillary. Someone said Trump was an asshole to Hillary. No, I mean, literally, I don't disagree with you, but there was an actual back and forth debate while Trump was being an asshole. This was literally, I don't even know if Biden had an uninterrupted minute of talk tonight.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, it was different. Like, he wasn't just aggressive this time. He would not stop talking.
Right. Like, yeah,
I don't
exactly
remember that with Hillary.
And that's the thing with Hillary. He was an asshole to her, but he also acted like, you know, like someone who was there for a debate and was letting the other person say things that they could actually interact with. Trump literally would not let Biden talk. There was no debate because Trump couldn't hear anything that Biden was saying because Biden couldn't get anything out. There was no answer. Like, there was no Biden says something, Trump responds. Trump says something, Biden responds. That maybe happened once or twice throughout the whole hour and a half debate because there was no back and forth. It was just, listen, I don't know how you would transcribe tonight's debate. I don't know how you would in a sensible way that could make sense to a reader. I don't know how you would transcribe tonight while also getting across how tonight went. I think it's impossible because if you transcribe it the way it played out, the words cutting out back and forth like that wouldn't make sense written on paper. And then if you tried to put some together and give it some leeway, so there was a fragment of a sentence that was, you know, that was there so you could actually read a string of words together, then you wouldn't be doing justice to the dynamic that was actually going on. There's like no accurate way to read tonight if you were reading it in a book or in a newspaper or in an online article. It's just, you know, it was a whole different thing from him against Hillary. Total misogynist asshole to Hillary. Tonight was totally something else. And Grimm with the super chat says, when you were talking, you spoke to Grimm, by the way, Mike, when you said how we live in a failed state, because Grimm dropped a super chat to say, yes, Mike, we live in a failed state.
Yeah, unfortunately. I was going to say cheers to that, but that's not the best response, but I agree. Cheers to that for agreeing.
I mean, we do in very many ways. I mean, multiple.
I mean, our response to COVID.
The COVID.
Exactly how a failed state would.
COVID, but not only just COVID, like going back, the criminal justice system, the idea that the person who is the president of the United States didn't win the popular vote, and how this has happened. This isn't the first time that's happened either.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
yeah. Totally agree.
Grim, what are you talking about? You're saying read the super chat. Is there another super chat I'm missing, Grim? Because I've read all your super chats. That was the one I read. Is there something else? Is YouTube messing with me and not showing me something that extra that you put? I'm making sure. Give me one second here. Don't want to miss anything. Oh, there is some missing super chats. That's bizarre. Let me refresh here. You know, Mike, YouTube, man. YouTube's got to fix their game here when it comes to these super chats. They don't always show for me. This is not the first time this has happened. You're smart for not doing a live stream because the super chat hassle is not worth it. I'll tell you that much right now.
I would describe me not doing live streams more laziness, but if I did do live chats, like whenever I do, the super chats are always something that's confusing to me because I try to go like into the live chat like panel on YouTube where they should just like show up and they don't go away because if you just look at them through the chat, they disappear after a while. But it's always confusing.
Yeah, no, it looks like that was it. I guess so. I guess I was just behind in the chat. Yeah. Let me rephrase this because I don't want people to stop giving me super chats either. There should be an easier way for the super chats to come through on YouTube, because the live stream used to be much smaller, so I'd actually do my interview show, because usually if it's not a special like tonight with the debate, I would have a guest on to interview, and then after that I would go to the second half of the show where I would basically just read questions and comments from the chat room in general, and I used to be able to like read that and handle it because it wasn't that much. And then more people started watching. Thankfully, I don't regret that at all. Mm-hmm. But reading the YouTube chat has become impossible. So really, the only way I can make sure I can catch questions and comments, unless I just happen to catch a regular super chat out of the corner of my eye as it comes through, the only way for me to guarantee getting to your comments and questions is through a super chat, because YouTube puts them in a separate section. I'm saying they could fix that separate section so it's a lot more obvious and updated more frequently. But no one cares about this anymore. The super chat thing is totally an issue that no one here wants to hear about. But I think we've hit everything with the debate. Mike, would you agree? Is there any final words you'd like to say about the debate?
No, I mean, I think that we extracted way more substance out of the debate than there actually was. It was just chaos. And we tried to like scrounge up the pieces of whatever that explosion of shit was. And I think that in order to really determine like the outcome of this debate, we will have to look at these focus groups. And I hate like the corny focus groups on like CNN or whatever, but like they are really insightful in like gauging what the normie voters want, assuming that like they actually get a pool of people who are just like undecideds and whatnot. But I really feel as if, you know, this debate kind of solidifies the fact that Joe Biden is going to maintain this lead. There wasn't anything significant enough to really change the trajectory in my mind. And in the event it happens at, you know, debate two, which is a town hall debate, or debate three, by then it's probably too late. So, you know, the next big one is the VP debate. I don't know how many people are going to tune into that, but at least that one should be more substantive, I want to say, because Mike Pence is a right-wing ideologue, but he's less belligerent than Donald Trump. So maybe that one will be an improvement. Either way, I mean, I want all of this to be done so bad. I'm so over this election. And, you know, I think a lot of people are, because our election cycles are so long if you compare them to, like, any other country. So, like, by the time it's over, it's like we're so sick of it. And then the next year, you know, comes and it's already we're gearing up for midterms. And it's like, We've got to change this. This is exhausting for people. This is why people check out of democracy and don't vote, I think, because it is even for people like us, where this is like our jobs. We do this for a living. It's exhausting. It's too much election. Like, I'm sick of it.
I got to say, usually I disagree with that take. I love the long election seasons. I usually think this is fun and exciting. And I don't mean it in the showmanship way either, because, you know, I'm paying attention to the Senate races and the House races and local races. And I think, being that the presidential election happens when it happens, it adds to that. You know, unfortunately, less people pay attention to midterms and non-presidential election years, unfortunately. So when there's a presidential election, not only are we voting for a new president and there's all those big primaries and that's all very interesting to me, but it raises the stakes on the down ballot elections too, and that's really what I like to usually pay attention to. So usually I love the long election season. This year, though, for the first time ever, I agree with you. I'm tired of it. I'm ready for it to be over. I think the coronavirus is the real 100% reason for it. I think I'm just
yeah.
I mean, it has taken so much from so many, And obviously, might have been just talking about the people, the 200,000 plus people who have died and their families. I mean, a lot of people are hurting from job loss, threat of a looming eviction, housing, living situations, you know, just in general, the idea of just being stuck inside as much as we are, not being able to go to large events. I mean, even if people are going out, that doesn't mean all the things you usually do have reopened and life is back to normal. I mean, we're still very far from it, even in places that want to pretend life is normal.
Yeah.
I'm exhausted of it, and I want something to change so it could be properly dealt with and we could get back on track to getting rid of the coronavirus, at least if not permanently, because it seems like it might always be there, to the point where it's just seen as another type of flu or something. We just get a vaccine shot for every year, and it, you know, that's the end of it for the majority of people. And I feel like we're not going to get there with the Trump presidency. And, mm-hmm. you know, I also, honestly, I'm looking forward to starting to build the world that comes after coronavirus, because we're clearly not going back to life beforehand. I mean, yeah, these things might come back that we love, and you know, I hope they come back very soon. Concerts and bars and clubs and all that other fun stuff. Here in New York, eating indoors at a restaurant. You know, schools opening and summer camps being in session and going to theme parks and all this other fun stuff. And I think and hope we will get back to that. But it's not going to be just a complete transition to life as it was. And I'm looking forward to building, you know, and pushing for what that world will look like. And I'm stuck. I'm sick of being stuck where we are right now. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I feel like we are just
100%.
We are just like stuck in time right now, because nothing is getting better and nothing is changing. Go ahead.
Oh, totally. I want to be able to see the light at the end of the tunnel, and we don't see that right now. Like, when will we return to, you know, not normalcy? Because I don't think everything or anything will ever be normal, you know, in terms of like resembling the pre-COVID era. But like, it'd be nice to know that it's not going to be this bad, right? I mean, like, somebody, I can't remember who it is, I wish I could cite them on Twitter, made a really important thread about how like social isolation is going to be something that psychologically impacts a lot of people that we're not even talking about, like the people who have been directly affected by COVID-19. That in and of itself is devastating. Like, I've had a friend who had COVID-19 for like 3+ months, who was a healthcare worker. But like, in terms of like just being able to see people, that will be really huge. Like, my niece just had a baby and I can't meet her because it's like, well, you know, in general, you want to be extra cautious around a newborn.
Right.
But like during COVID, it's like you've got to be extra cautious, you know? So it's like, just to be able to do these little things that we took for granted before, I think it really will make people feel better. And yeah, like you said, I think that I'm ready to build a new post-COVID world, whatever that looks like. Hopefully it's better than this, because it's pretty shitty right now. And we're all kind of just, we're done with it. I'm over it. You're over it. I know everyone is.
All right. I mean, I feel that. My 5-year-old just started kindergarten, and, you know, interestingly, so far so good with the school. I think they're taking it very seriously and handling it very well, so I'm not worried about that. But my son was someone who loved school, loved seeing his friends.
Yeah,
but he just spent 6 months spending 24/7 with his two parents and baby sister, and barely saw anybody else. And the boy who loved going to school is having trouble going to school every day. And I think that's going to be something we're going to have to deal with, unfortunately. I think there's going to be social issues with many young children and kids. I mean, my 1-year-old is not able to do the various like baby extracurricular activities that you would do with a baby at this age, where you socialize them with other babies. Like, she's not seen any kids her own age. Her brother is all she plays with, and he's 4 years older than her. And at one, that's a big age gap, you know? Yeah, there's a lot of untouched future issues we're going to be dealing with because of coronavirus, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. I was talking to my niece about the same thing, who also has a kid who's starting kindergarten. And I was telling her how, like, he also loves school. And, you know, I remember myself, like, being so excited for kindergarten. And it's like, man, these kids are getting robbed of that experience, that memory of, like, starting school, making friends. Like, this is so, like, imagine, like, when these kindergartners grow up and they look back at that moment, like, they're going to be telling their grandchildren about how weird it was that, like, they couldn't go to school. Like, it's just, the future looks really weird, but hopefully better, you know, but who knows? But it's so bizarre.
I just have to add an addendum here. What we're talking about, though, is things that should be happen, that, excuse me, things that should be happening after a proper response to the coronavirus.
Mm-hmm.
Because the right would hear what we're saying and then go, absolutely, I agree 100%. That means Trump is right. Everything needs to just reopen up right now. No, 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 no.
Yeah.
The lockdowns and the quarantines, no matter what you hear us complaining about that were the results of these things, those things were the right moves. We're saying that it sucks that these things that we're complaining about now can't be dealt with yet because of Trump's response to the coronavirus, which has left us in a situation where it's not been dealt with and we're still responding to it. Because there are a lot of right-wingers who think the same as us. It's ridiculous. Kids are being robbed of their childhood and going to school. So the solution is throw caution to the wind. Coronavirus doesn't exist. Just reopen the schools. Who gives a shit? Want to go to a concert? Don't want to miss your favorite band's touring? Absolutely. Me neither. Just have concerts with 2,000 people without masks, no problem. No, 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 no. That is not what we're saying whatsoever. And, yeah, you know, I'm happy to continue waiting for this stuff and unfortunately having to worry about how we're going to deal with certain issues if we're still fighting this thing. Because, you know, if we don't solve the coronavirus problem, we can never deal with what we just spoke about.
Yeah, and to add to that, the reason why we're doing all of this stuff, isolation, social distancing for so long, is because it hasn't been properly dealt with. Like, if Trump actually did a mask mandate and a proper lockdown, like, if we actually handled this like adults and not a failed state, there would be some semblance of normality that is returning, not 100%, right? Because, like, the entire world is dealing with this, and we do need a vaccine. But it wouldn't be as bad. We wouldn't have to be as cautious. But it's because we didn't take it seriously that we're still having to deal with this. Like, if we all, if 100% of the population wore masks and we all locked down for a good period of time, we would get past this. That's just the fact of reality. But because we have a government and a party in particular, Republicans, who are just so conspiratorial, so gone that they care more about, you know, the economy than actual human beings, as if, you know, you can choose between saving the economy and, you know, this lockdown. I mean, I think that honestly, Biden had a really great point when he said that if you want to have the economy rebound, you have to get COVID-19 under control.
Right.
And I never expected him to make that good of a point, but it was really important because that's just that. You can't just say, all right, we're going to pretend like everything is normal and the economy is going to go back to normal. That's not the way that this works, right? You know, so I'm glad that you made that point because it is important. Like, I don't want people to think we're saying, let's just agree with the right wingers. I'm sick of this. We're just done with COVID-19. That's not the way it works. Because we fucked up, now we're dealing with it longer.
Right. Absolutely. Well, Mike, thank you so much for joining me tonight. I really appreciate you taking the close to an hour and a half to break down this really bizarre night. I don't know. I'm still in shock of what it was. Yeah, plug your stuff, man. Let people know where they could find you.
Yeah, you can find everything at humanistreport.com. I will be on additional platforms very soon, new streaming services very soon. I can't talk much about that yet, ooh, but exciting stuff is coming. So follow me at humanistreport. And yeah.
All right, folks, youtube.com/Matt Binder. Subscribe today. Doomedpod.com for the audio version, the podcast version of this show. Patreon.com/Matt Binder if you want to support what I do financially, if you can, obviously. Times are tough. But if you can, I do appreciate it. I will see you guys later. Thank you for joining us on this very special episode, this very bizarre episode of Doomed.